it's like 15 minutes of like new material and then like 45 minutes of
rehashed.
Yes.
What hour is this?
We are an hour 21 of the 24 hour comic podcast.
Sweet yeah, gravy, Marie.
That's daylight. No, that's not even daylight yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. We're getting close.
We're getting
though.
There, though.
Where were we before Tabor and the oil spill?
I didn't do nothing.
Tabor and the oil spill. That's my new band name.
Steven Seagal, Flight of Fury, I win. Go.
It's not a contest.
It was so. He inquired about the name of the Flight of Fury. Put it in Netflix queue. Next.
Is it an invisible plane?
Really?
I don't know if it is. It's probably.
Put it in your next queue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a giant plane that can hold a Seagal.
Okay, shut up.
It can hold a late 50s Seagal.
Superfly also mentions. Also, I wanted to mention that Crank sounds like a lot like Steve Buscemi. Not the Steve Buscemi from Reservoir Dogs, but the Buscemi from Airheads, the character of. He played a character named Rex.
Okay, well, A, he's quoting. Airheads.
What?
Yeah.
Airheads!
Okay.
Have you seen that movie?
Are we supposed to have moral outrage?
No, I'm just like, oh, is that a movie that you like? He sounds like the Steve Buscemi of Airheads versus okay. The Steve Buscemi of everything else he's ever been in.
The quintessential yeah. Buscemi.
Well, thank you, I think.
Yeah.
Can you guys help me out with my theory? All you have to do is read out some lines on the air. Then he has a little script for us.
All right.
Crank, you're supposed to say... 67 copies of Moby Dick.
67 copies of Moby Dick.
That's very Buscemi-esque.
I'm supposed to say the movie or the book, and you're supposed to say they made a book out of that?
They made a book out of that?
That did kind of sound
Buscemi-esque. Yeah, that's Buscemi-esque. I'm sorry, this guy's right on. This guy's right on.
He wins!
Yeah.
Busted. No, good confirmed.
Probable.
If we're reading.
Or while Steve Buscemi was here.
Braxton writes, hey guys.
Braxton!
Mike.
Only people who live in trailer parks name their kids Braxton.
Has it been off the whole time?
I don't know how long it's been off, but it's off now.
No.
That could have been bad.
Yeah,
that could have been bad.
That was on. Hey, they did make it back.
Oh! Hell yeah. Yes?
So you haven't been able to hear me the whole
no,
time.
No, that was on.
It was on?
You just turned it off and then turned it back on. Or you just... When he... Just go.
Oh, well.
Whatever.
Mike, we could hear you. That's what counts.
Yeah.
Can't believe you actually made it back. You're a man of your
Braxton
words, sir.
Writes,
yeah, just barely.
Hi, guys. Barely props sure. For digging Caius Crank.
Oh, thanks.
Have you ever heard of a band called Orange Goblin?
Yeah.
Orange Goblin.
Well, there's this whole
didn't
movement,
they do the
like...
soundtrack to Orange Demons?
No.
And Orange Suspiria?
No.
Oh, yeah. That's
the other goblin that's just...
Oh!
Yes. No, Orange Goblin, there was this whole stoner movement kind of thing in the 90s, and Orange Goblin was part of that.
Is Orange Goblin some sort of
and I should have,
euphemism?
I should have...
And the stoner movement
sure.
Ended like in the 90s.
Well, when I say stoner movement, I mean it's like, you know, really heavy Black Sabbath-y blues kind of bass riffs. And
Black Sabbath-y blues.
Monster Magnet, yeah, sort of, yeah, yeah. But like bands like Orange Goblin,
I like
Caius, that. Caius was sort of like that. There was a couple of other heavy ones, like there's still some. There's like a...
Current COC.
Well, so, you know, COC would be part of that.
I got COC. Corrosion Conformity, man.
There was a... Oh, crap, I can't remember. There was a band from the past couple of years that had... their cover was by Dan Burton.
Oh, you're
Dan
thinking
Burton.
Of Jackal.
No, Dan Burton did a cover for him. And they're... anyway, that's... Yeah, so, yeah. Sorry.
I should have read this.
Who's calling you at this hour?
Not only
wealth.
Who's
calling me at this hour?
Your wench? She going to serve you some mead?
Hopefully.
And a flagon.
And a flagon.
And a goat skin.
should have read this note while Scotty was here, and also while he was telling us awkward stories. The wife and I are doing the whole in vitro thing to have babies. Yeah. So today I had to go to the in vitro clinic to do my part. You know, provide them with Uncle Salty's white
please
root oil.
Please don't tell me he was listening to the Crankcast.
Anyway,
while he was
I brought
doing
along
that.
Jonathan Hickman's new nightly news trade just in case I had to wait around the waiting room. I got.
It's right there.
I got kind of the feeling the nurse thought I was bringing some shady bohemian porno material. Anyway, I'm looking forward to Scotty's reaction to his prize, otherwise known as my wife, getting knocked up with the potential twins. Suck it, Scotty. Ha ha.
Huh.
Braxton.
I like how he calls them in vitros. It reminds me of Space Above and Beyond.
What?
It was a TV show that used to be on. Yeah, good, yes. Damn good TV show. I've got those.
Was that just like the
but,
most...
good TV show?
Well, random, like...
There were a whole bunch of, you know, sugars? In vitro babies born as soldier things. And
we
that,
don't
but they were treated
as
second class,
yeah,
and they just called them in vitros, you know.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Good. I'm glad we answered your question, Braxton.
Don't destroy me for asking.
I hope you have twins.
Don't destroy
me. And grow up.
Shut up.
Mike, get up on that mic a little.
Don't destroy
get
me.
Get up on that.
Why? Nobody heard me last episode, apparently, the whole episode. Don't destroy me for asking something that I know other than... Oh, my God.
Mike, dude, I would like to read some emails in the future.
Don't destroy me for asking something that I know other people have asked, but I am a humble assistant after all. My destruction would go unnoticed.
Where do you get your ideas from?
Anyway, I was wondering, what program do you guys use to record the Crankcast? Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. Thanks a bunch, Terry.
Vegas 7.0.
Yeah, that's what we're using now. I hope
8.0 just came out.
And it looks awesome.
That's where I work.
But
I work
more
at
on
Sony.
The, more on the video end. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Vegas is a nice program because you can edit video, edit audio. It still handles multi-tracking great, although I feel like they're neglecting that side of it a little bit.
What side?
As far as development, the audio side.
No, that you can. It's all. It's all incorporated now. The audio editing is now incorporated in Vegas 8. You can do it right in this program. You don't have to like go into SoundForge or anything like that.
No, you could always do that in Vegas. But I'm saying like as far as their development, I think they've...
Oh, my God, I'm going to sleep.
Good job, Norton. Way to bring that one up.
King Kirkendall writes...
Well, I work there. I work at Sony.
I know.
Dear Crank and Mike, we're moving on to another letter.
Dear Crank and Mike...
Can I read this? Can I read this?
No, you can't
it's
read.
It's really like a remedial reading class when you read this shit. It's...
To kill
like
some
third grade.
Shut up! I will.
God,
punch
what
you.
A dick!
I will wrestle you to the ground.
You are poking the bear, young man. You are poking the bear.
I'm just trying to get a little excitement out of this. My last final hours here.
Why don't you talk about his sack or his scrot at all?
I will. I will fight you, and then the last 3 hours will be me crying and bleeding.
To kill some time on the 24-hour podcast, you should have Mike and John Suntress reenact any '80s buddy cop movie using the voices of Thor and Dan DiDio. No.
Well,
I love
awesome.
Do
that
Thor, and I'll...
Another 48
I'll do
hours.
Nick Nolte.
Another 48
Thor
hours.
Thor Nick Nolte. Yet another 48 hours.
I love the
Jane.
Show. Nowhere else can you get
no.
an in-depth perspective on comics, Tauntaun porn, and Billy Zane's career. Keep up the great work, Ken.
Billy Zane have
Is great
career?
In parentheses?
Well, we had this whole thing going on about Billy Zane crying.
No.
And it's a long story.
Vicious Myth. Asks,
is it Vicious or Vicus?
I just say Vicious.
Is it Vicious?
I wonder if Crank's seen an anime feature called Jinro the Wolf Brigade. I saw it on Cartoon Network and thought it was beautiful, but I felt the Red Riding Hood comparisons just was just beat over my head. If you've seen it, I'd like to hear your opinion on it. Speak!
I haven't. Just because I don't have Cartoon Network or anything, and I haven't branched out much
into
the anime
stuff. I know that
Dark
Horse put out the manga of it.
I don't mind
Anybody
being,
else
like...
seen Jinro?
I haven't seen it. I heard the
like
visuals
that.
Were cool, but the story was lame.
Like, if it's going to be, like, a retelling of a fairy tale, I don't care if they beat... Because I know the fairy tale. If they beat me over the head with it, then they beat me over the head with it, you know?
Yeah, fuck yeah, man.
Fuck yeah. I'll fucking wear their sack on my
head. If I want to read Red Riding Hood, you know, in manga style, then fucking beat me over the head with that shit.
I'll watch Company of Wolves again. On a Red Riding Hood story.
It's totally Red Riding Hood, you know, but whatever.
My life's kind of a Red Riding Hood story.
Yeah, well, red shirt hood.
Yeah.
Shirt.
Exactly. Red...
Go.
My grandmother was eaten by a wolf. True story.
But it wasn't just one. It was a pack.
Phil writes, I just want to let you know, Mike, that as a child I had this dream that I thought I thought was real as well. I used to get up during the night and get a drink from the fridge. And as I opened, a giant pink bunny would come out and chase me. It still bothers me a little
Saying,
to think
still
about
going,
it.
Still going.
Who wrote that?
Bill.
Nice. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing that, Phil. Here's a story. Here's
that's
a nightmare.
Comparison
I
of the past.
I would like to share a nightmare I had
have
as a child.
A nightmare I would like to share.
You okay, go I'll go first. I lived in Texas. Uh-huh. I lived in Tyler, Texas when I was a child. And we had an above ground pool. And I had a dream that I was like laying on my back in an above ground pool at night. And the constellations of Taurus and the constellation of who's the
Orion
the
hunter
dude,
yeah.
They connected themselves and
they were making love in
no,
the sky.
No, the bull was
Orion
trying to charge
hunter?
Me. The bull was trying to charge me in the pool, So I like went underneath the water, and I just see like this, the glimmer of, you know, the water above your head, just like this connected bull, just like charging the water, and I can't breathe, and I'm watching this like fake bull, you know, charging the water, and then also Orion trying to shoot me with his arrow.
Have you had someone analyze that?
No.
It's very poetic.
I just thought, yeah, it's very. It's. I want to see that in a film. I want
Here's
to see
my
that
poetic nightmare I would always have as a child. I would be sleeping in my bed, and a vampire would come into my room, except it would have insect wings on its back. But before it would bite me, I'd make sure that he would let me put on a scarf. And that was it. And then I would wake up.
Before he'd bite you?
Yeah.
So he should bite you through the scarf?
Yeah. I wanted to make it hard.
It's like, if your teeth are big enough and can make it through the scarf, you earn my blood.
If he was a total badass vampire, like Uwe Boll would obviously break. Yeah. He'd have no problem. And it was also completely dark in my room, so you couldn't tell what was going on.
What Uwe Boll did for zombies.
Yeah. Uwe Boll directed
he
my
does
dreams.
Now for vampires.
Don't say that.
No sense.
That's an insult to your random
my
mind dream. Yeah, to your subconscious.
Your subconscious can't light a scene properly.
Neither can Uwe Boll's conscious.
It was nothing but ambient light.
I can't tell what's going on in this dream. It's shadows.
The internet's down, so I can't really.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well, we'll continue on without
you,
that.
You can make up a letter.
That doesn't matter. We don't really need to read them.
What? If you were to write an email into the show, Mike, what would you write?
Stop.
Please, go to sleep.
Oh, it'd be a telegram?
Go home. Aren't your parents worried about you?
No. Although I'm worried about my parents.
Are
I'm
you?
Not going to get into that because
Welcome
I'm
back,
not that
Eric.
Drunk.
But no, you haven't got
it's
to
that. Early. It's
nine
early.
Five, maybe that's a 9 a.m. story.
That might be a 9 story, yeah. But, you know, yeah. I kind of worry about my parents sometimes.
Yeah, it's done.
Eric, you're fresh. You got anything?
Yeah, just out of curiosity,
hey,
I was wondering.
Pull up a mic.
Just out of curiosity, I was wondering about your stats. Have you guys seen, or are people actually downloading this, or could you have done this, you know?
Because of the internet being in and out, I don't think we could have checked if we wanted to.
I might be able to check the raw stats, but.
The raw stats!
Just to get a general idea of what's going on with it, but
do it now.
We haven't looked
on your fantasy podcast team. Which episode?
I know people were cut before, like we started actually posting them regularly,
right?
And then when they would comment on a post, that post would go away. So I think they quit commenting.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't know.
Because after I went home, I looked it up. Like I went to the website, and it was fun to pull them all up. And I wonder if you guys had like, you know, a shitload of downloads last night. And
I hope
sort
so.
Of, no. Like while you guys were. Tortured in the middle of the night.
God, I came
down a little bit.
When you said last night, I was like, "That? What do you mean?" Oh, and then I remembered I've been here since 10 in the morning. So, yeah, last night was an accurate description of.
Yeah.
I figure I'll pass out for a day and then get up and start checking things.
Start
see
over.
What happens.
Start your life over.
Yeah.
Start over. Move to another town.
I'm not even going home. I'm just going to sleep in my car and then drive someplace else. You know?
Take all your stuff and go home. Go someplace else.
Just go someplace new. I got everything I need right here.
I'm kidding, because I don't want to keep living like this. I can't do this anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, Chicago, man, I used to love this city, man.
I'm burned out.
I first came out to this place when I was like, oh, crap, like 15, 14,
15? You are not going back. You're not moving back home because this is your home. You're staying here.
Old home Frank's
Chicago.
Moving me to L.A.
All right, that's acceptable.
I won't move to L.A. I might move to San Diego.
L.A. is San Diego.
No, it isn't.
Except with more coke.
No.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. You know?
You're not going back to Ohio.
I don't know what I'm doing.
No, I'm telling you.
I'm saying I don't know what I'm doing.
No, I know what you're doing.
I don't know what I'm doing.
I know what you're not doing. You're not going back to Ohio.
I got my... no, I ain't...
Who in this room right now is originally from Chicago? Yeah, that's right.
No one?
Mark
that's
would
right.
if he was here. But
who, if they had
no, he's
the
from
ability,
Chicago. Everyone goes to Chicago.
If they had the ability to move to a different city in the continental U.S., who would do that?
Me.
Maybe.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you don't live in Chicago now anyway, so that
I did.
Count.
I did.
Why did you leave?
Josh paid me $9 an hour in Chicago.
Why did Chicago... there was no allure to keep you here? There was no... My point is, we all came here for a reason. I think that we all like it enough to want to stay.
I would love to live here. I could have made it work. I would have lived here.
If you can't find a job in Chicago, you can't find a job anywhere.
You work two jobs just to, like, just to make ends meet and not be able to go out and enjoy Chicago?
Yeah, I don't know. I brought this up, but like, I kind of bitch about this where it's like the house, and I can't really use this as a comparison, I guess, because it was sort of unusual, but I was living in like a one bedroom, tiny like bungalow type house thing, you know, to myself, mm-hmm. with a yard and a fucking parking space and all that crap.
Wait, where?
In Cincinnati.
Okay.
Right? And I was paying $360 a month for it, you know? I moved out here. My first apartment was, you know, a dungeon that I could touch the ceiling, like mm-hmm. just by putting my hand up 2 feet, or not even 2 feet, a foot, like above my head. And, you know, it was like, not really nice landlady, but that's beside the point. But, you know, that was like $600, you know, and then that, my rent's gone steadily up ever since. Sure. You know,
but it's the quality of life you're paying for.
What quality of life am I paying for?
All this, brother! All this!
No, Chicago's a great city for a lot of reasons. But it's still a big city, and that's mm-hmm. it depends on what you're looking for. What I love about Chicago, the reason I moved here was A, the job market. It's, you know, post 9/11. I work in, you know, advertising marketing, and that industry, the floor fell out from under it, and Chicago is one of the very few markets in the country that stayed somewhat stable. So that's why I moved here. But, you know, what I love about the city is you can find just about anything you want, but there still aren't things that, you know, say, you know, New York, the absolute crush of humanity that's there. You're very locked in if you live in like Manhattan or any of the boroughs, where in Chicago you can get out of the city if you want, but it's still a major city. And it's also, you know, Midwestern, and that's important to me.
Yeah, I don't know. That was the other thing that's kind of weird. And I know it sounds like a stupid little nitpicky thing, but being in Central Time is just weird. I really? Still haven't gotten used to it, and I've lived here for like 6 years. You know,
used I mean, I, now, like,
but I grew up Eastern. I grew up Eastern and stuff like when TV shows Eastern, come on. You know, mm-hmm. just like basic things. Like I have to wait an hour for a TV. You know, like a TV shows come on weird times and stuff.
No,
for me.
They come on at a great time. I can't imagine like a Pacific or.
Well, it's later.
That prime time viewing.
Yeah, it is later. Yeah, like,
I like that. I like shows that don't, you know, when my block of TV, like on a Tuesday night.
But you get to go bed early. Like, go to bed earlier. It
goes from like 9 to 11
or
something. Who
can actually watch TV when it airs?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, not now, but I'm just saying like the whole thing about being in a different time zone was kind of, it's still, I haven't quite like completely adjusted to it because I still notice it.
He doesn't have cable or anything. He's like, he's torrent downloads.
Doesn't matter.
He uses his VCR to tape stuff and watch it later.
Well, I still call stuff. I mean, I call people, you know, and things like that, and I have to worry about, like,
what is kind of funny about Chicago, which does annoy me, is that there is still big city envy, which cracks me up. That,
big city
that
envy.
A lot of Chicagoans have big city envy of New York or L.A.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. bullshit, man.
It's true.
No, Chicago's true. Really true.
No, I know, but no.
Chicago's huge and
saying,
sprawling.
Like, Chicago is as big as L.A. or New York.
But there's a serious inferiority complex on to New York and L.A.
You know what? I kind of like that about this place because, I mean, I'm from a town that has the biggest chip on his shoulder because down the road is Nashville, which is mm-hmm. the biggest city. It has more money. They get all the stuff. That's where the government seat is, all that stuff. And everybody talks about how much Memphis sucks. And so I move up here, and I'm like, oh, this is just like home. Except bigger.
Exactly.
And a different time zone.
I don't hate Chicago.
No, it's
I mean,
the same time.
You know, I mean, Chicago, I love coming to Chicago. Like, when I didn't live here, you know, it mm-hmm. it was a great time. You know, I always had a lot of fun and shit.
But living here can be really... I'm thinking...
It can grind you down.
All the parking tickets that I've gotten
exactly.
in the entire time. Sodomized.
Oh, my God.
Sodomized.
I never had
parking
a parking... I had one parking...
That you added the bike parking ticket.
Oh, right. Wow.
I had one ticket of any kind before I moved out here, and I got that back in 1994.
Yeah, but
you know, once I moved out here, I've had like
30
parking tickets at least. You know, like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, you see that little bit of orange up on your car underneath the windshield wiper, or those fucking stickers that they put on.
Yeah.
Like I've got my.
There's one on my window now. And you got to take a razor blade to it.
Oh yeah, you've got it. You've got it. I have so many of those little white strips where the stickers are.
Or what's even worse, when you see one lying on the ground and you don't want to pick it up because it might be for you, but you know you should, or else they'll come for you.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll still come for you.
Like, is this mine? Oh, do I look at the tag?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
It's and I know that New York is really expensive in Boston and The bigger the city, the more expensive it is. Chicago's an expensive city to live in.
Yeah, you know? But I was looking at different things because, you know, I was thinking about maybe like Portland for a while, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff sure. like that. But like Portland's pretty comparable to Chicago mm-hmm. price-wise, at least when I was looking at it.
Wow.
Apparently San Diego is slightly more expensive than Chicago.
Yes, San Diego
I've always heard
very
that.
Expensive.
You know, like New York, I think, is probably a little more expensive than here.
Definitely.
It's not by a large margin, I don't think, you know?
It's enough.
I know it's, like, tough to get, like, good housing and stuff there, but, you know.
Yeah, it's like a one-bedroom apartment in New York is a lot different than a one-bedroom yeah. apartment in Chicago.
And it's, you know, 150% of the cost.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I've got a friend who lives in New York, and, yeah, it's, he lives in Queens. And it's, yeah, I mean, I'm blown away at how expensive his apartment is. And the thing is, I went into his apartment and felt really claustrophobic, and I couldn't figure out why. There's only a front door. Like, they don't have a back door. And if you think
wow.
about – yeah, I mean, if you think about Chicago fire codes, like, there's always – you know, everybody's got a back porch. That's where you go to smoke. That's where you – that's where you go to die if you're young and white. and have a long, great future ahead of you. But – yeah, it's just these tiny little confined boxes. And the thing about living in New York is that Chicago feels too crowded to me sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to know that you're never more than about 20 feet away from another person at any given point would kill me a little bit.
Well, Chicago and New York, two things that they have in common is that they are really two of the last cities in the United States. They're very... very few livable
like
cities.
Metropolis types.
Yeah,
things?
It's like, you know, I live in the city. I live in Chicago proper.
Well, yeah, but I consider I live in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but this isn't like
well, you don't live
a
downtown
city.
Chicago,
right? But I mean, to me, this is like this is. I know. I mean, Cincinnati is this like tiny,
but
little,
it's not a suburb.
Cincinnati,
you don't
a tiny little
you
city,
don't live in a suburb.
But most of Cincinnati is a lot like Chicago, where it's neighborhoods.
Yeah,
you know, I don't consider this like a city. This is a neighborhood. You know.
Right.
Because yeah, well,
there's
Brooklyn
no buildings around
Queens,
here except for
the
condos they've been building. Thing. You know, there's no buildings that are more than like 3 or 4 stories high, you know.
Yeah. But, I mean, people still live in the city. You have public transportation, which is accessible pretty much anywhere in city proper, and it is neighborhoods. Each neighborhood has their bars and, you
yeah.
know, their grocery the stores.
Restaurants,
they're
like,
kinda,
sort
yeah.
of, they're sort of a lean, whatever they lean towards, like, ethnicity-wise and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Yeah.
Sure, and it makes character in the city. I lived in St. Louis, and that I love St. Louis for a lot of reasons, but living in that city is not one of them, because there's very few parts of St. Louis that are
apparently.
That are really, you know, habitable.
My friend Sam that I worked with lived in St. Louis, grew up in mm-hmm. St. Louis, and from as many notes as I can compare with him, St. Louis is Cincinnati. They're like
oh,
the
yeah.
same
mm-hmm.
city.
Yeah. Sister cities almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, growing up reading comic books, I always imagined living in the city, like just living in like the Loop, living in the Loop here, mm-hmm. like everywhere around there are tall buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what's really different about the mechanics of actually living in a city, because you don't no. you know you're not around those giant buildings. And
I mean, like, Chicago's awesome for its transportation, like mm-hmm. as far as its public transit kind of stuff. Because like, you know, growing up in Cincinnati, we had the Metro, you know, which is this crappy bus line,
sure.
and it takes you nowhere. You know, like, you can't hardly get anywhere, and you have to transfer and do all this crap, and it takes like 2 hours just to get someplace you can drive like in 15 minutes or whatever, you know. And
yeah.
so moving out here, it's like. I mean, you got buses, you got subways, you know, you get all over the place.
Well, for me and my hobby, one of the things I love about Chicago, comics. It's a great comic
There's
town.
A lot mm. of comic shops just in this, like, sort of area.
There's a lot of comic creators.
Like, 10
that
miles
live here.
Or
yeah, there's a lot of creators. You'd be surprised how few comic stores there really are. I was doing a comparison, a Mac comparison between New York, Chicago, and L.A., and we've got L.A. has 58, and this is just in Los Angeles, the city limits
of
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
They have 55 or 58, it was, in Los Angeles. New York was right around 40. And the information that I was going off of for Chicago had a lot of stores that don't even exist anymore. And
sure.
it was at like 22.
That's it?
And that's
like, I'm thinking just in this area alone.
Yeah,
there's like
no,
well,
dozen.
This is
yeah.
a very very comics saturated neighborhood. You've got, right now you've got, you know, Dark Tower, you've got Variety,
right,
which
right
has been there
yeah.
for since God was a child.
Years,
the one on Montrose, the Comic Vault. You got Evil Squirrel just right up the street in Rogers Park.
Well, I remember when
that
well,
heinous Galaxy Comic Zone down on
Galaxy Comics is not a comic store. It is. It is. It is. I Yeah, it's an odd place.
There were a lot of ones that were listed were like video stores / comic stores, too.
Well, it's because Graham Crackers has moved in and pushed all the other smaller stores out.
Actually, that's not really true.
I'm joking.
Well, we get that.
But you guys have how
lot,
many? How many stores?
We have
Metro?
Nine, but only two in the city. Okay. One in Lincoln Park, one downtown. In downtown, we took over a spot that Comic Relief had vacated, and they had two in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
We just have one.
I remember when Devil's Day used to work over, you know, on Western, or when our offices were over on Western here, and it was like right, you know, when Dark Tower. What was Dark Tower called before Dark Place?
It was Watchtower.
Watchtower.
It was two doors down from here, and then there was actually a store that was next door to where we are now.
Right.
Which was Windy City Comics for a long time, and then it was
Comics for Heroes, but Heroes was misspelled.
Yes. Comics for Heroes, and that place was.
But so, like, at one point within, like, you know, a couple of blocks, there were four stores right there.
Yeah.
Like, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, you had Variety, Comics for Heroes,
variety,
and Watchtower.
Well, that smiley face one that nobody thinks is a comic shop.
Yeah.
But well, this is getting off topic, but it's weird how if...
What
you're,
topic
you're
is
doing,
that?
Yeah, I guess, Love of the City. If you're doing, let's say, you know, $500,000 a year at a comic store, and somebody opens up directly next door to you, they're going to take away a significant portion of your business, but the combined income of the two stores added together will greatly equal more than that $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing how it'll be like that no matter what. Mm-hmm. The more stores, the more people buy. And there's so many stores that when stores close, people just say, I quit reading comics, and just stop. They don't
sure.
find somewhere else to go.
Sure.
That's like I remember in the 90s in Cincinnati, like, well, 90s were weird anyway, because there were comic shops
mm-hmm.
springing up left and right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, probably, because most of them died again really fast.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a certain loyalty to your comic shop involved and stuff, too, because, like, I was buying... There was a neighborhood comic shop that I had, and I was buying from them. They ran into some trouble, and they moved to another building, so I went ahead and followed them there. And then, at one point, just before they completely disappeared, they were selling their comics out of the back of a van, you know, like, kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Well, I mean, it's a tough market right now, and, you know, we can talk about, you know, online distribution and that kind of stuff, and a trend that I think that we're seeing from a lot of people is that they're not totally abandoning their comic shops. Some people are, to go to online.
But they're not giving their full business to the one source.
What I hear as a validation from a lot of people, you know, for right or wrong, and there are good and bad reasons both ways, but this is the hard facts of what's happening, is that the people that aren't totally leaving their comic shops are saying, well, you know what, I have the regular comics that I get, and I order those through my online distribution, and then I go to my old LCS and I pick up stuff that I think is interesting. What those folks don't understand is that the pull box members of any comic store are the tent pole for that store.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
When did that happen? Because that didn't seem like that was like that like a decade ago.
No, it's been in the last probably three, 4 years.
All the discounting services online are the ones that are drawing people away.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, and that's kind of a lot of conjecture to say where are things going there. But, you know, pull boxes, you know, when did those really start? Was that really kind of with the birth of the direct market that people was like, you know, just pull my books? And how did that become such a huge part of the business
model?
It's an
industry standard. I mean, no matter what store you walk into, one of the first questions any new customer asks is, what's your club? What's your pull?
Mm-hmm.
What is your...
What's my discount?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the discount. Mm-hmm. Like, the discount was just all about the incentive to actually have a pull box so they'd know what to order.
Sure.
Like, that
well,
was
you're,
like
you're,
the basic
you're,
breakdown.
You're helping, and I think that's fair. You're helping your local comic shop out by ordering comics.
And
so
you're committing to a specific title ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
so we know that there's no risk if we get that one extra copy for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and so for that, you get a discount. It's a you know, it's a quid quo pro.
Well, it's like having your, you know, building up a relationship with your local bartender. Like, where you can
really,
if
is.
You can walk into a bar and he knows what to hand you. Mm-hmm. Like, you walk into your comic shop and, like, if there's something similar to what you like and he pulled it for you and stuck it in your box, you know, you got a good percentage of a chance that you're going to like it and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of
this
thing,
is a question
know?
I ask all non-comic store shopping people. Where do you go in your personal life every week? Where is a place that you go to every week?
Home.
The bank, the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
Do those people know you? Do those people know you as the human being that you are? Do you want them to? I just go to the drive-up.
Well,
there have
been some really cute high school girls at my local grocery store.
Yeah.
No, I'm.
And they're gonna say, how much toilet paper do you buy, Mr.
Cohen? I do buy an awful lot of toilet
beer
paper.
Beer and toilet paper. What the hell?
Yeah, I know, that's all I live.
Well,
with.
That, I mean, that's one of the goofy things about podcasts is that I think as you see more people going to online fulfillment for their comics, there's a void that kind of gets left in there. In their
clubhouse mentality is gone.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like I don't get the comic shop talk like I used to, and I still want that, but I also want
Everybody
to get better
this
discount.
Kind of an outlet to be able to sit around and talk about whatever.
Sure.
I think gaming does a lot, and I'm not into gaming at all, but there's so many comic shops now that'll have the table set up. I have no idea what these guys are up to. LARPing scares me. Mm-hmm. But
You can't see me.
it's very clubhouse and it's really community, and it's really depressing to think that something like that could go away.
And that's the weird thing. Like, you would think, okay, like, just on the surface of it, you'd say, well, there's message boards and chat rooms and things. But,
No,
it's not the same because people are asses. Online.
Yeah, well, and it's back to Patrick's point of, like, you have a shop and it's pulling X amount of money. And then you open a shop, on the same block or whatever. And it's going to start pulling in more people and new people. And you don't know where they come from. They just kind of materialize because it's there, And that comes back to this, the circular debate that we get into of if the LCSs start to diminish or continue to diminish, where's your renewing fan base coming from? And so you're looking at, all these different industry changes. Is it going to book retailers? Is it, where is your renewing fan base coming from? Because they have to find comics at some point.
Questionnaires out at cons to try to pin down how did you get into comics? Where do you go for your comics?
We used to do that years ago. Every couple of years we would do a survey, but it's so labor intensive to do it and to tabulate it, and it's a hassle for the people. And if you want any legitimate information, it has to be in essay form, and nobody wants to do that.
Yeah. Are you asking the right questions?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you reading into those responses?
Well,
because
it's
all, it can be very objective.
Base, though.
Most of the people I know, people definitely in my age group, over and over again, obviously, this is just anecdotal, but one of the things I hear again and again, it was the grocery store. It's like you would go in and
that's the corner store. It's the corner store for me.
Right. Yeah. And it's the landscape is so different because you don't have those spinner racks everywhere now.
Convenience, the convenience store was where, I got my comic fix. But
And I'm starting to see those again. It's several of the 7-Elevens around Chicago have comics. The big problem is whenever we're getting them, and inflation hasn't gone up this much, but you can walk into 7-Eleven or Huck's is where I got them, and you can pick up a comic for 50 cents, I think, when I started, or 75 cents. Dude, they're $3 now, and very few kids are going to drop their allowance on $3 for a comic, and that's...
Yeah, I mean, as far as, the...
He's the exception.
The ratio of inflation was, it was a difference between buying, three boxes of Lemonheads or buying a comic... Well, 4 boxes of Lemonheads and buying a comic when I remember, early buying.
Mm-hmm.
And what now it's shit, that's a lot of Lemonheads. So it's because you can still get candies pretty cheap. But, you're not going to get your comics, three for one.
It's whenever you go to, a shop like this, you may be getting your comics for 20% off. Go to 7-Eleven, they don't have a pull box. Yeah. They're not going to give you a discount.
And those comics are just trashed.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Just beat the hell.
But it's the impulse buying that I think got so many people into it, and the landscape is so different now. I don't care about glossy paper. I don't care about any of that stuff. There's so many times where I just crave that four-color newsprint that I think...
I just want
the smell,
Don't get me started.
He's a comic huffer.
Yeah.
you open up a bag and just...
old book.
Well, in the glossy paper, your fingerprints get on it right away if it's
blacks.
Got those black margin.
Always, I feel bad about that even though I don't collect.
Right.
I'm like, I'd smudge my
Is it smarter for the comic companies? I'm sure that I would hope that they think about these things and talk about these. Is it maybe a smarter business model for them to reduce the prices on single issues, put them on crappier paper, not worry about the printed quality as much, get them out there as teasers, and save the higher quality stuff for
the
trades.
That's a great idea.
What they were doing with, if you look at something like the New Teen Titans, when they did the big switchover.
The Baxter paper and the
tails. Yeah.
And make them $1.50 or $2 and then put out your trades on the nicer glossy or your hardcovers, that kind of stuff. Because I think that, even your average comic buyer, whether they're completely switching over to trades, there is definitely, I'll get this in trade and I'll get this in singles, where I think that they're losing that new reader because there's starting to be a price wall there. And my prediction, and this sucks, is that by the end of 2008, comics aren't going to be $2.99 anymore. They're going to be $3.99 across the board.
Oh, no, that's definitely true. They've already started the increase on a lot of mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, like,
books,
the smaller
DC
publishers,
especially.
Too. I mean, the smaller publishers have to. Sure. I mean, Devil's Due, most of their prices are at $3.50.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're at $3.50. You look at IDW books, and they're
$3.99 to begin with.
Yeah, and like, you know, whatever. Who knows what they're going to raise up to.
If anything leads to the downfall of the monthly, that's going to be it.
Sure.
And that's pretty depressing.
Well,
on a similar note, mm-hmm. like with I can't really speak for Pullbox anymore, but like I was going to suggest at a certain point that we forsake actually charging for them at all, you know, for the downloadable mm-hmm. versions. Give the things away and then just start selling mass trades.
Yeah.
Like, you know, collected mm-hmm. versions of nice printed, mm-hmm. you know, collected versions of them.
But would you do something like, if the trade is going to be 6 issues of a series, would you only release 4 or 5 on Pullbox?
Well, I hadn't actually worked out the mechanics of it.
Well,
but
you
I'm
know,
saying, like,
I think
you could
that...
supplement mm-hmm. it with, because if you're getting solid numbers on your downloads, mm-hmm. you know, you can count that as distribution numbers, mm-hmm. and you can use that for selling ads. You know, because ads are all about what your distribution numbers
are. Where would the ads
know?
Go if you're just giving them?
Well, you put the ads in the file.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, so you're sort of supplementing with ads. It's sort of what Wowio.
Well, Sal's been pitching this one on the show for almost a year now, and it's that basic idea: is that you pre-order a trade, okay, and as part of that pre-order, you get 5 of the first 6 issues or 5 of the 6 issues that will be in the trade, you get those as monthly
downloads.
Digital downloads.
Yeah.
You get those delivered to you, or you have, you know, this is your code to go and download it in whatever, you know, not, you know, DRM free format you want. And whenever that 6th issue comes out, that's when the trade is going to drop, and you'll get the trade mailed to you to finish the story. So you've got the 5
right.
issues
I mean,
digitally, you've been able to keep up with it monthly, and then you get the trade as part of your pre-order.
I mean, they're all experimental. Like, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. there's not enough hard data to say this is a trend and this is where this is going to go.
Yeah. But like, you know,
even though it's been like, I mean, you know, Pullbox has been almost going on a year, I guess, you know,
yeah.
that it's actually had stores open. But even at that point, I wouldn't say that there's enough data there to say that.
Well, it's going to have to be one of the big two to step up and do that as an experiment, and they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to do it on a title that's going to draw people. They can't do it on.
Well, yeah, they'll have to do it on an A-lister. You know, I mean,
yeah, they're going to have to do it on Action. You know, or Batman would be.
And I'm curious. You know, I want to see where it's going to go, because I think that you can totally do this where it's almost like I kept trying to convince people, or not convince people, but like a sort of the argument I was using for like. Convincing people to say, rather than just download them off BitTorrent, to actually
mm-hmm.
you know, pay the 99¢ or whatever and go get them. But it's almost like a patron mentality. You know, we have to go back to the point where people supported artists. Like,
mm-hmm.
artists weren't selling things. They were getting, like, given money to do things, you know, kind of thing. And we have to kind of, like, foster a patron mentality again in people that want stuff, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah, let's all ask Michael Golden for commissions.
I'm just saying. you know, it's like,
Was that you, Patrick? The Michael Golden
yes,
commission?
Yes, yeah.
You're the Raspberry Commission, huh?
No, I didn't actually. I like Michael Golden's work a lot, and
mm-hmm.
I haven't paid to do anything. A friend of mine at the convention signed up on the Thursday night, the preview night for Wizard
mm-hmm.
of Chicago, to get a Machine Man sketch. He was number 4.
Oh, okay.
And over the course of the week, you pay up front.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the weekend, Michael Golden did no sketches, but he took pages and pages of lists, and he was going to mail them all back, and still hasn't done that. But I actually just for the first time saw the Raspberry sketch today. I've heard of it, but never saw it.
Was that the one that says patience is a virtue or something?
Is
like
it Viru?
Is it Viru?
Misspelled virtue.
Oh,
boy, you know, it's the whole digital delivery and how you order your comics and where the industry's going and the book retailers and the LCS. I mean, there's no question that the industry is in a state of flux right now.
We don't know,
and nobody knows where it's going. Nobody knows.
Yeah, it's a lot like trying to, like, you know, you're out on the ice without, like, skates or anything or any kind of cleats, and you're just sort of, like, slipping around going,
well,
like, I hope I go this way.
I mean, one thing, whenever, you know, Borders came to us to do sponsorships for the show, and that was very telling to us that the book retailers are taking notice of comics, and But a lot of the feeling that we've gotten from them is that they're trying to figure out what kind of a market is there for them, because they know the direct markets out there. And, you know, they see, you know, OGNs and trades and that kind of stuff. They know that it's starting to become more and more of a business. It's one of the only parts of the book retailing market that's increasing in sales at a steady pace right now.
And it's one they have the least handle on.
Yeah, because they've never really invested a lot of their marketing or their business behind it. They've always kind of carried them, but it's more of an afterthought. But they are taking notice now, and you know we're going to see where the book retailers really start to be a major player.
It's weird because I've you look back on like people that have taken stands on things or like mm-hmm. Tried bold moves at the time and mm-hmm. it was just wrong timing for them or whatever, mm-hmm. like. I brought him up before, and I can't remember who the hell he was. There was a company, and they decided it was a couple of years, like 2003. They decided they were going to put out nothing but new trades, like a different title every month or something like that. But it was going to be like instead of putting out four issues, mm-hmm. they would just put out that that trade or whatever.
Yep.
And it was a bunch of like old schoolers. I can't remember. God, I'm making myself sound like an idiot, but
there's a group doing that right now too.
Are there?
Mike
but
Holt's
like
new Chicago group.
It's stuff like that. Like I mean. They were convinced that the trade or the OGN or whatever, the collected format was going to be the thing.
Is it also called comic
book? I was just reading this anthology of stuff that had like forwards like with reviews and things in it,
mm-hmm.
and it had a comic section by Charles Vess in it, and this is from like 2002, and he basically just says like, yeah, the trade paperback is going to save the comic book industry, but a lot of people are going to screw it up along the way, until
sure.
they find the right way to do it,
sure.
And, I mean, that's going back even just 5 years.
Comics are never going to go away. It's too resilient of a medium, but it's got some real hurdles to get over, and it's going to have to redefine itself.
Comics are going to go away, but, I mean, retailers are facing a tough point where, like, where are our margins going to
mm-hmm.
be?
Where's your market at, It's never going to go away, but
is it worth it for us to spend, whatever, how many ever hours a day you're open.
Without movies right now, where would comics be? And that's something I always come back to, is that, we see that there are steady gains in comic sales right now. They are going up, not at a great percentage, but they are going up. How much of that is because of the just rush of comic movies that are out there, and shouldn't that increase be a lot more than it is? And what happens whenever the movies stop coming out? Because it's going to happen.
Oh. Yeah, but how was I going to phrase this? It was something along the lines of like movies seem to be relying a lot on comics, or at least comics people as springboarders and
yep.
like developers and things like that too. So
yeah,
where
I wanted
would
to
movies
take
be right now without comics?
Mm-hmm.
I
was going to take the exact phrase, just turn it around.
I'm not saying that movies mm-hmm. wouldn't exist, because of course, obviously they would.
Oh, sure.
But where would movies be right now without comic books?
They'd find some other source material. They would. That's what they do.
Yeah.
More remakes. Three's Company, the movie.
Yes. I want my Xanadu.
What do you think,
remake?
Terry? Where would they go if they couldn't cannibalize comics? If the movie industry couldn't keep going to
the cannibalize themselves.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
They would
make keep remaking movies until you go to the year 2020, where you see like, let's remake a movie. Like, oh, only thing to remake is the remakes.
Jersey Girl 2.
Yeah.
TV shows, really crappy TV shows. I'm really,
yeah,
really
the Fall Guy
sick.
Is gonna be a TV. This is the truth. The Fall Guy will be
uh-huh.
is gonna be a movie.
Knight Rider is going to be a TV movie.
What's that?
Knight Rider is going to be a new TV movie.
Knight Rider is going to be a new series and a new movie. Oh. Like, different people own the rights to that thing.
That's
oh,
just
so
not
someone,
nice.
Has, someone owns the rights to, like, a movie,
and
someone owns the rights to the show.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, we're going to see both. I mean, whether the pilot of the new one makes it to whatever. But
can the market bear two Knight Riders?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No.
Exactly. It shouldn't even bear
one. I'm ready to see if it can, though. Put three out there.
When we were talking about our love of cities before, I wanted to... Something you and I were talking about off the air before, the cost of living in L.A. compared to Chicago. When I was out in L.A. just a little while ago, the drink that I get here in Chicago at a dive bar is like $4. Vodka tonic. Mm-hmm. At a upper-end bar, it's like $7.50. In L.A., it was $12.
I don't go to those places. No, because I'm from Madison. I live in Madison.
But you lived in LA for a while, too.
I didn't know. I haven't lived in LA.
Oh, you just
I'm looking to move out there. I'm trying to move out there. I'm not even looking to live there. But the places I went, we went to a few places that were like, they're Madison prices. It's like $2.50 for a beer.
Is this LA? Is this
$7? Like Santa Monica.
Okay.
Which is like rich, rich ass, you know? You know, $9.50 for a pitcher. And it just comes up as far as beer goes. Though. And then that's how I gauge. That's kind of like one of the points of like, I got to move out here. It's just like Madison. You know? It's like I'm paying the same amount for beer. That's a huge point of
a bonus.
Yeah, that's a
selling point.
Big moving point. Yeah, yeah.
A good friend of mine, Eric Breadtruck Tillmans, who's a pro dodgeball player now out in LA. He was on Extreme Dodgeball.
It doesn't exist.
It does. He was on the TV show Extreme Dodgeball.
Okay,
but
well,
he used to work for me before he moved out there.
I hope he got a lot of
pussy. He's back in town. He did.
He was back
in town last week, and he and his girlfriend and I were over at a Bocchi Cafe. You know, those fancy pseudo Italian restaurants that are just little buckets of fake pasta salad and things. Anyway,
buckets of fake what?
Pasta salad. Fancy salad, big names,
people.
So we're sitting
fake
there,
pasta
we're sitting
salad
here,
people.
Just like this, and his girlfriend Tina's got her purse slung over the back of her chair. Guy walks by, grabs a purse, tries to stick it between the bags he's carrying. We see it, stop him, whatever. The night before on the train, they had a tea set someone had given them, and it got stolen from the luggage rack. And when her purse almost got stolen, Tina was a little shaken up, and I said, "You guys live in L.A. This has got to be commonplace. I mean, there can't be more crime here." And Eric's like, "We don't in LA. You don't see other people. You don't hang out with people. You can't afford to. You're in your car all day. You're just not around groups of people like this because you can't afford to. You're not rich enough. You know, it's not like all the celebrities go to all the movie openings. We don't do this kind of thing at all out there. So you never see people like this. No." And I just thought that was such a weird dichotomy from what I believe LA to be to the way they're making it sound, that it sounds so uninviting and unfriendly. I mean, granted,
they're
still on here, but
I am prepared for that kind of, I don't know, mentality, I guess. Like,
you're ready to be shut out of the hot social scene.
Yeah, exactly. I already feel that way anyway, no matter what city I'm in. I'm an outcast.
I just want to say it's light outside.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, Jesus. Usually, I'm with a lady when it's light outside.
But she won't go out with you unless it's light out.
Yeah.
No dark.
We should make out. We should go make out.
We might be able to find you a lady.
I didn't get an electron out of the bar. So
I really need to go home. Or not home, but Tim's home. And sleep on the couch and whatever.
All right. You know, on that note, I'm just going to say, hey, we're going to wrap up the 21st hour of the 24-hour podcast.
I think that Tabor and I are probably taking off, so we'll just end this one.
Yeah.
Is this it for you guys?
I made it 21. Yeah. I made it 21.
All right. 21.
I made it 3.
Woohoo!
Yeah, but you were
3 hours.
You were at
yes.
21.
That's true. Exactly.
21. I wasn't
and there
here
was
the
an
first
hour
4.
I wasn't on. I
so
wasn't on
subtract 4 from 21.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, first 4. Well, the first 4 don't kind of count for much of
so
anything
17.
Anyway. So, yeah, all right. Well,
17 hours worth.
We're here for at least 20.
Godspeed,
hours.
Brothers.
We'll see you all in a minute.
Keep it up.
All right. Yeah.